All right. We've got Jay's tickets to give away to see the Jays and White Sox. We'll do that later on in the show.
Sox stink.
Chris LaRue, our Blue Jays radio analyst, joins us from
the
booth. No, he doesn't. Joins us from the booth. But to get this hour started, it gives us great pleasure to bring in our very good friend and one of our favorite contributors, David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, and a former MLB executive. That, by the way, I do mean it, is a stunning jacket. I love that sports coat.
I appreciate that.
I do.
I like the chair better.
No, you can't
see. I really love your polos, and I think this is great for the listening audience. It's really, we're off to a whopping great start.
It is a great start.
That's why they paid Jeff the big bucks, to get it off to a great start, like that.
They've never paid
me
the big bucks. Let's get it. What you're going to do is you're going to tell me, David, and I know that you've got an opinion on this. Going to tell me why did the Red Sox do Rafael Devers dirty the way they did?
Mm-hmm.
You think they did him dirty?
It's a great question.
Which part was dirty? That what I must have missed something. Did they send him to the California Penal League?
No, they didn't send him to Sacramento to the Athletics. They did not do that. But
you blew it.
I saw your podcast. I know what your reaction is. I was trying to I know what your reaction is to this. And quite frankly, I kind of sort of share it. I don't think Craig Breslow is the devil incarnate because he made this deal. But it just seems to me like it was. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't call an unnecessary deal. Well, Barker, you take the interview over.
Well, finish your question.
Was this inevitable? Going back to spring training and I don't want to do this, and Alex Cora saying, hey, it's a new sheriff in town sort of a thing here, new front office, different people. Alex Bregman might play second base. He's not playing second base. Christian Campbell's called up. Was this inevitable in your mind?
Yeah, I think the real problem here is, and you heard Breslow and Sam Kennedy try to talk about it without doing him dirty, because I would have done him way dirtier than they did him. They talked about alignment. They said that 48 times. And they talked about not wanting the young players to be in an environment that wasn't productive. And that's all code for he wasn't good in the clubhouse. And when you're a DH only and you're staring in the barrel of 8 years of DH only, that is just not good for your roster. You want a player to be older when they segue into that, not now. And the real conversation that I haven't been able to have, and I can't wait to have it with you, is that did you hear Buster Posey say, hey, we're not sure, he'll DH, he'll play some third, he'll play some first, maybe who knows what else? Can you imagine if the Giants, and tonight the lineup will come out and I'll dollars to donuts, he's in the DH slot. But can you imagine if he plays the field for the Giants when he wouldn't play it for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think he said that he's open. If I'm not mistaken, I saw this in social media, and I quite honestly don't believe 90% of what I see on social media. But it does appear as if he said, I'm open to playing first base.
Yeah.
For the Giants. Listen, I've got to think, I'll ask you. I understand there are rules. There are tampering rules. I get that. Willie Adames is a friend of his. Does it ever happen, David, and I'm not asking you for concrete details, does it ever happen where, hey, you know what, kind of you're talking to this guy, ask him how the family's doing and, how the car is and what life's like at home and will he come and play for us if we trade for him? Does that go on? Are there sort of back feelers before deals like this get made? And could that have been the case where Willie Adames maybe just texted him and said, bro, would you play first base here?
Yeah, it's irresponsible if you don't tamper with a player before trading for him
or signing him.
You absolutely have to, and you use very many different types of people to do the tampering. Sometimes there's tampering down at the scout level. Sometimes it's with agents. Sometimes it's you go to players in your clubhouse and you know where the relationships are, especially when players, my favorite is when players shared an agent. then it's just a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to have players talk to each other who have the same agent. But if you're San Francisco, you got to do your due diligence, because people are talking about this as such a lopsided trade for the Red Sox. Imagine if it's actually a lopsided trade in favor of the Red Sox, meaning the Red Sox add at the deadline, they start playing better, even though they've won like seven in a row, and it's like an elephant has left the room in that clubhouse.
Right.
And they reallocate the money to a player who actually will play and not be a problem in the clubhouse, then you can imagine the Red Sox being better getting out from under that obligation. And I remind you guys how Devers got signed. They're coming off losing Betts. The fan base was insane. You got to sign Devers. You got to sign Devers. You let Bogarts go. You got let Betts go. You didn't get anything back. That Devers deal, he's a great player. Great player. But that's a very heavy deal. And for them to get out from under it, given all the ancillary stuff that surrounds him, may be a huge benefit to the Red Sox at the end of the day. So if you're the Giants, guys, you got to make sure you know what you're getting. And to do it, you count on your own players to speak to the player and give you a report.
Okay, I was so excited when I knew you were coming on, because I wanted to ask you this question, because I've never really had to ask anybody this question about whenever you – have you ever been told by an owner to trade somebody but keep it a little quiet when you're trying to do it? Because that sort of sounds like what – kind of happened, right? You go to Kansas City, you know, the owners don't like what they heard. You know, you sort of relay the message, hey, if you get a chance, somebody's interested, you know, let's sort of try to dump this. How does that take place? Where do you start is the question.
So here's how it happens. The owner will call you and say, I don't ever want to see that guy in a uniform again. Get rid of him now. And then you talk the owner off the ledge and you start making calls. Craig Breslow did not trade Devers to the Giants without speaking to every other team. I guarantee you, no matter what they're telling you, because if in fact it's true that Breslow and the Red Sox traded Devers to the Giants without speaking to anyone, that is a breach of duty and he should be terminated immediately, which means don't clip that. It didn't happen.
Right.
How many teams were going to take on the full salary? Because the Red Sox were smart. You want to get out from under that. There's nothing worse than paying a player not to play for you. Side note, the Marlins are paying Stanton $10 million this year and next year and the year after for him to play for the Yankees. That is a last resort when a player is overpaid or you just can't get anyone to take on the contract.
Have you ever got a player that in the past has said that he's been a bad teammate? And if you did, how was the conversation and what did you do about it?
You mean while they were playing?
Yeah, like
or
you
after
got it.
Or when they've been retired, like when I would speak to Hanley Ramirez and he would smile at the fact that he was just young and immature and that's how it was. And now he's different as a grown man. Very few players realize at the time they're being a bad teammate that they are a bad teammate. They learn about it sort of as they mature and as they get older and they sort of understand. It's like kids and parents. Kids don't appreciate what parents do until they become parents. And then they realize, wow, that's sort of what it is as players get older and more mature. They understand the mechanics and the power they had. And it's an issue in all leagues when you're paying a ton of money. These are kids. Don't forget, 25, 26, 27, sometimes they're 23 and they're just paid so much money. It's hard to be mature at that age. And so I think Devers has a problem that he will get over. And as he gets older, I'll give you the best example, A.J. Burnett.
Yeah.
When he was young, he was impossible. Couldn't stand him. And then all of a sudden he got older and he became a true mensch. He became a really great husband, father, person, just someone you'd want to be around. And he will acknowledge to you, man, you know, that was quite a rebellious time when I got a neck tattoo the day I was pitching and couldn't pitch well because I was in pain. What the hell was I doing? That sort of stuff.
I just talked to him like 2 days ago.
He's great.
He is tremendous.
You want to know something scary, David? He roomed with A.J. Burnett.
I did.
Look at him. Only you can see Samson's
face. Oh, he wasn't the person you're talking about.
Transitive property, Barker. The transitive property of crazy. You guys must have been doing some stuff.
No, he was great. He was the last person you're talking about the grown up, the nice dude. You know, he would do some things occasionally that you would make you shake your head a little bit. But other than that, he's one of the nicest dudes I've ever met, David, ever.
He's amazing. He will admit to you, if you ask him about me and about the Marlins, he will acknowledge that he was a bad boy. And he just had his arm. Oh, my God. In my career, his arm was just, it was electric.
Yeah.
Electric. And you roll your eyes because if you behave that way and you're not good, guess what happens? You're released just immediately. You don't put up with it. But when you've got AJ's arm, you get a chance to keep getting the ball every 5 days.
I've had people ask me, have I ever been around or known anybody who was Nuke Lelouch? And the name that I think of is AJ. What was that? Was that a no-hitter or perfect? It was a no-hitter with 9 walks or something like that, right? I mean,
he did that for the Marlins.
Yes. Yeah. I always, that.
He broke the car window on purpose.
Of course. People ask me that all the time. Yeah. How can someone miss a warm-up pitch by that much? I said, miss? He literally hit his spot perfectly.
He did.
What are you talking about? People don't get that. That if there's great video of that you can find of him hitting that car window in the background of a warm-up pitch with the Marlins. That's A.J. Burnett. He can throw 98 a dart.
I'm just surprised you didn't hit Billy the Marlin when he threw the pitch.
Awesome.
There could have been an insurance issue. There could have been an insurance issue there. David, just before we move on from Devers, one of the comments about him being a bad teammate, I kind of wonder if, you know, if you're the Red Sox and you go back to spring training this year, and I don't think going into spring training people necessarily thought Christian Campbell would make the team. He makes the team. I wonder if for the Red Sox at some point early in the year, the equation didn't change for Craig Breslau and Alex Cora and John Henry. They said, wow, we really do have, we have some really good young players here. Like, we've got the core of maybe a good team for 4 or 5 years. You know, we really do have to start looking at what we allow in our team, what we allow in our clubhouse, just how far we're going to go. And I wonder if that changed the equation with Devers.
I would say two things. One, if your front office only discovers that they've got good young players in spring training, you probably don't have the right front office. Two, Devers is the perfect player to have when you've got great young players. You need to sprinkle some veterans, some high-priced guys who compliment the young players, show them how to be big leaguers, lead them the way, showing by example, by work ethic, by flexibility, by understanding the role of the front office, understanding the role of the manager, and the role as a player inside a clubhouse with young guys. And the Red Sox made it pretty clear he couldn't do any of that stuff. That's why he got traded.
Well, maybe Kyle Tucker will go there next year. Communication's a little better, interested. You like that? Young core? Be there forever? I mean, it seems like a perfect fit, no? That kind of guy?
It's pretty funny you say that, because the benefit of players for what's happening right now is that you're trying to get paid and you're trying to expand the universe of teams who can pay. And it's always better for the players when the Red Sox are in the market at the top end of the market. And to me, after this PR disaster, which to me wasn't a real baseball disaster, they are going to have to be in the market. And that's a benefit to any pending free agent.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, and I really will move on from this. But the other thing we need to say, the ghost of Mookie Betts lingers here, doesn't it? I mean, it really does.
It's something that the front office shouldn't think about. So
right. You
would think that going into Florida, we had the ghost of Wayne Huizenga tearing down the World Series champion in 97. And we heard about it every day. You're doing what Wayne Huizenga did. You're just the next owner doing fire sales. You have to really separate yourself and do what you think is right for the team and try to be as honest as you can with your fans. As team president for all those years, I did not fully disclose things. I tried to wordsmith and manipulate with PR and with media, and I understand why I did. I felt it was my job. Looking back and looking and listening to how executives talk now, it makes me laugh. Like yesterday with Breslau, he can't say the things he said because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And it's okay to make sense even if it will make you look bad, because guess what? In our sport is the ultimate decider. Wins and losses. Don't say you're better this year. Be better this year. And then say, I told you so.
Yeah.
That's the most powerful four words that an executive can say, because it quiets the room.
David, I still don't know. I think I've asked you this question a couple of times, if the Blue Jays are any good or not. But I don't want to ask you if you think they're good or not. I want to ask you if you were running the Blue Jays and if you were sort of on the fence, run differential sort of towards you, I don't really know, right? You know, good pitching against the Phillies, we're really not good. But everybody else, you know, we can compete. We're right there, right? Three dudes in our rotation are decent. If you're running the Jays, what could you sort of do to take it over the hump? Trade somebody, bring somebody in. What would you do?
So we talk about this every time I'm on, and I love it. And what I like to do when we're live is point out to you where the Jays are and where we are in the calendar. And what we want to do is get to the point where the players have earned the right to be the beneficiary of a buy at the deadline. And here we are about a month out. Toronto, they've gotten their way. They've lost three in a row, but five over, four back. They have done what they needed to do. They have put themselves in a position where they have not lost sight of the Yankees. They're squarely in the running for a wild card berth. Of course you add to this team, because this is what you put together this window for. The whole purpose of what the Blue Jays have been doing is to be in this position, and you've got to send a message to the clubhouse, and you've got to get it right. That's the two-pronged part of this. Bringing in someone at the deadline, I did it a lot. It only worked some of the time. When it doesn't work, you know, you sort of wasted the bullet. When it does work, it's an amazing thing that is so additive to your team that they can just take off. And I think the Blue Jays are a prime candidate for this because they're that good. Conversely, look at the Cardinals. You would think that they've earned the right to have an ad because they've played way above expectations. But when you look at that team, realistically, even an ad is probably not going to be enough to sustain during the course of the season, and you could be making a mistake going forward by doing something today. The Blue Jays, I don't think, are that at all, because adding to them could be the exact rocket fuel they need.
Are you surprised that Vladdy's gotten off to a slow start after signing the big deal?
I've seen it so many times, but I didn't think this would happen to Vladdy because of the family he grew up in. So often when players get money, they're free agents or they just sign extensions, they feel that sort of pressure of being finally getting what they wanted, finally getting the big deal, and it can impact performance, no question. But I thought that Vladdy, being around his dad, Vladdy Sr., and being around the big leagues his whole life, would have been able to guard against that. And I still think that maybe it's just, you know, performance that will regress back to the back of his baseball card. I don't think he feels that pressure the way some players would. So I would just dismiss this as just a couple of months of relative underperformance.
Your conversation with Ken Rosenthal the other day about the lockout, possible lockout in air quotes, was fascinating. There's really no way to avoid it at this point in time, is there, do you think? I mean, barring a complete, you know, barring the union just saying, yeah, whatever, we'll do whatever you want.
And then cows will jump over the moon?
Exactly.
I'm trying to imagine the last time either union or management just said to the other side.
That's what I'm saying.
In any business.
But I just don't. I get the sense that it's almost a foregone conclusion. Like, I can't remember the last time a commissioner has sort of openly mused about it this early. I could be wrong, but I don't remember Bud doing it.
So I'm going to try to frame the conversation differently for us, which is a December lockout is really not a big deal. It's more of a strategic maneuver in the middle of a collective bargaining negotiation. I think what we should be discussing is, will there be missed games? Mm-hmm. Because you remember last agreement, the season started late.
Right.
And all they did is get permission from their TV partner, Fox, and they extended the World Series, as you recall, a week into November. And so everyone still played 162, and there were just the rescheduling of the early series that were missed. Not a big deal. The question is, will we actually have a shortened season? And then how do you deal with comp for your employees, meaning players? If you're only playing 150 because of a lockout strike, it'll be a lockout because of lack of agreement, will players expect to get their full salary? Because that becomes a whole nother part of a collective bargaining negotiation. It's called the settlement negotiation, which is, all right, it looks like we have a deal on the business points, the four corners of the document. Now we got to talk about money for current day. What do we do when you earn your money over 162, but we're playing 140? Are we docking everybody 22 games worth of pay or 30 days, whatever the total days is? And that becomes a pretty big deal. And so that, to me, is the conversation. I'm not there yet, but I'm pretty close, especially given that we're still well over a year from this happening. But the signs are definitely there that we shouldn't ignore.
The fact that, you know, and I don't know the details of this, the legal investigation going in and around MLB, the Players Association, right? I just don't know the details of it. I mean, we've had passing on. He's tried to explain it to me, and I just – is that a – could that be a mitigating factor here in this whole thing?
It actually, to me, is only going to be an aggravating factor, not mitigating.
Okay.
And so MLBPA has an issue. And they have an issue both as a union, but they also have it in terms of their leader, Tony Clark. And it should be noted that he's got his own lawyer. MLBPA has their own lawyers as they're trying to figure out what kind of trouble they're actually in, what Tony Clark actually may have done. It may be alleged that he did. But the issue from our standpoint as fans or media is, what is the impact to a negotiation when you bring a new actor to the table?
Mm-hmm.
If the union has to fire Tony Clark and Bruce Mayer and bring in somebody new who's got to get up to speed with all of the issues and figure out his constituents or hers or theirs and who wants what inside the union, that requires a lot of time to get back to even in terms of institutional knowledge.
Right.
Tony Clark has a lot of it. And so that could have a delaying factor. So baseball, if you ask the commissioner in a moment of truth serum, he would tell you he would prefer Tony stays because it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Right. Yeah, it's almost, I mean, I've had people tell me that sometimes in negotiations, you know, the obvious thing is you think, boy, you wanted a splintered union so you could take them to the woodshed and beat the hell out of them. But sometimes you want people you know, you've done a deal with, you know what the pressure points are, and, you know, it's not always the easiest thing to try to negotiate with a union that's flying off in different directions.
Yeah, so we try that, and so do the players. The players try to divide the owners, and the owners try to divide the players. You try to do things that separate pitchers from hitters, maybe with changes to the ball, maybe with things that impact certain stats for one side and not the other, in an effort to see if you can get discord. And players do the same with owners, because if you can't get your own house in order, then you're losing track of things that you want from the other side. So you think there's an incremental benefit to that. The truth of the matter is, given the experience of Dan Halem and Rob Manfred, there is no way there's a splintering that can happen. There can be a problem with where owners are as it relates to a salary cap and floor and other issues, but that's not a splintering. That's a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Two very different concepts in collective bargaining when you have disagreements versus splinters. I don't view it possible for there to be a splinter on the ownership side. And frankly, Tony Clark is too experienced now. He's been around too long to allow for a splinter on the player side. But a new rep, a new union leader, that is something that could be possible, but I wouldn't expect that to happen. Mm.
David, really good of you to join us. Thanks so much, man. Be well.
That is a nice jacket, by the way.
It is. It's kind of
purple. It's beautiful on you.
It's purple blue on TV, and it's a nice kind of
purple. Brings out
your
eyes.
I think it's great.
Oh, God, I'm blushing. My target demographic, Blair and Barker, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
See you.
It's David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal, the podcast. It's the Devers thing is right up his.
I mean, he's blaming the player. You know, a lot.
Well,
and not giving a lot of blame to the organization. I mean, you could throw blame both ways.
Oh,
both directions.
I think
he didn't mention that, which I don't know if it's in his blood, too. You know, he's been around a long time. He's been on that side.
He made a good point about Craig Breslau, though. Coming out and saying, I think we're going to win more games this year because of this.
Well, it is. I mean, he sort of had to say that.
No.
Sent a message to your locker room that we believe in you, even though we got rid of the best hitter, at least top five in baseball.
Then you don't do
Maybe
that.
Maybe you don't you say don't, it out loud, but
yeah. That's my point. You don't say it out. You can tell the players that. You can go in the clubhouse.
Or you just shut
you can
up.
Go in the clubhouse and say yeah, or you just shut up.
Yeah.
But I do like what David said. It's much better to say "I told you so" than anything else. I just think it's one of those things that. I think it worked out well for the Giants because the Giants just need a hitter. And they're not going to sign a free agent hitter. We know all the reasons. It worked out well for the Giants. The Giants have always been able to develop pitching. They'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And if you're Tucker, you have another bidder. You would think.
Yeah. Although, again, now you're getting into a situation where...
Soccer or baseball?
No.
Soccer or baseball.
Kyle Tucker's going to go where the money, where the biggest, the most amount of money is. Maybe Boston is a player now. Certainly if Alex Bregman opts out, then Boston's going to have a lot of money to throw around. But I think the thing that really just kind of bothers me, and I get Red Sox fans. They live in fear of another Mookie Betts. This isn't going to be Mookie Betts. Rafael Devers isn't Mookie Betts. He's not the same type of athlete. He's not the same type of physical specimen. But I really do wonder about how the whole thing was handled. And I keep going back to Alex Cora coming out publicly and basically saying, hey, new GM, that contract that you signed, that was with different people. And that would kind of piss me off as a player. Go, yeah, it was with a different GM, but as far as I can tell, it was with the same team, the same manager, and the same owner. That is, of all the people involved in this, the guy who I think comes away looking less, looking worse of anybody, I think is Alex Cora. Because he comes across... And this may come back and bite him. He comes across as a guy who kind of threw a player under the bus.
Oh, he didn't kind of.
And that's not Alex. Alex Cora is the guy that walks on water and does everything right.
He does.
And I think he's the guy that has lost a bit here.
Yeah,
Rafael Devers is going to go on to be
fine. If you're Tucker, you're thinking to yourself, man, do I want to go live that?
I wonder about that.
I do too.
I mean, I've often wondered. If I have my choice, I've said this. If I have my choice as a free agent, one, I'm going to go where the money in term is. But two, if it's all equal, I'm going to a place that's got one newspaper or by that time, no newspapers, where I can be happy, just rake, do my thing, and I don't have to put up with all sorts of drama.
What if I don't do what he tells me to do? He's going to throw me under the bus.
Yeah. We've got Jays tickets to give away to see the Jays and White Sox. Let's take a break and come back and do that, and then we'll be joined by Chris LaRue from the broadcast booth as well. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's join Chris LaRue at the ballpark. Before we do that, though, we've got to give away Blue Jays tickets. Not we have to. We like to.
Yeah.
Giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Our last question and answer was... He's a first-round pick who made his MLB debut with the Blue Jays, but he was not drafted by Toronto.
Don't you do it.
He was... He has worn both types of socks in the majors as he has played in Chicago and Boston. He currently still plays in Chicago, just not for the White Sox anymore. The answer is Reese McGuire. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and White Sox. Shut up, Barker. Today's question is to win tickets to see Jays and White Sox at the Rogers Center on June 21st, or I'm going to make you explain why you're laughing. He was the first-round pick and played parts of six seasons in the majors. Despite being drafted by an NL team, he has played exclusively for American League teams in his MLB career, including the Blue Jays and White Sox. The trade that sent him out of Toronto ended up being one of the more significant deals in franchise history. Again, he was a first-round pick and played parts of six seasons in the majors. Despite being drafted by an NL team, he has played exclusively for American League teams in his MLB career, including the Blue Jays and White Sox. White Sox. The trade that sent him out of Toronto ended up being one of the more significant deals in franchise history. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590. Standard message and data rates may apply. Without further ado, let's go to the ballpark where we are joined by the one and only Chris LaRue. Mr. LaRue,
wow, look at that. You kidding me? Roof must be open. Look
holy
at that.
Cow.
Somebody needs to turn his volume up.
I looked over to Eric Smith.
First
and
time
I said,
you done this?
And I said, should I put my sunglasses on? And he said he would do it regardless of whether he was on TV or not. So,
wow.
So there you go.
I think we've lost you on TV, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Anyhow. But we still do appreciate the sunglasses. We can still hear you, so yeah. All's good. There you are. You're back. Hey, what was your level of surprise? I mean, there's a lot of things to talk about here, but your level of surprise, first and foremost, with Eric Swanson being DFA'd.
Well, I'm kind of torn just because I know that eventually he can be a good big leaguer, and I know that you guys feel the same way as I do. But at this point, I think in the season, the Blue Jays have to start making tough decisions where guys – you know, if they're not performing, if they don't look healthy, if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, then you have to make those tough decisions. You have to DFA guys. You have to send guys down that you might not normally send down. And I think that's what they did with Swanee. I think that was a tough decision. I listened to John Schneider in the dugout today, and he said it was a tough decision. So, I mean, it's always tough sending a guy down that has big league experience, that has good big league experience, or DFAing a guy, and that was just one of those guys. He's kind of he's tough to watch. He goes out there and he throws balls, and he doesn't get on top of the split finger, and he just doesn't have any options, so you can't really do anything with him. And I think DFAing him was the right choice.
What have you liked that you've seen from Braden Fisher?
I love him. I love Braden Fisher. I know that he's had, you know, not a huge sample size, but I think that Braden Fisher could be a stud out of that bullpen. The fastball obviously is 96, 97 miles an hour with some life at the end of it. But I think the biggest thing that the difference maker for him is the curveball. You don't see that 12-6 breaker as much as you used to. And it's in the zone and then it's out of the zone. And that's so hard to hit. A lot of guys have the slider, a lot of guys have the sweeper, whatever you want to call it. And it stays in the zone a lot longer. And Braden Fisher, I mean, the strikeout numbers are where they need to be if you're gonna be a stud out of that bullpen. I like the move. I was honestly hoping that they wouldn't send down Braden to keep Swanee. Yeah. And I'm glad they did what they did. And it's, again, it's a tough decision because you have a guy making a good amount of money, a guy that's been there and done that. But keeping Braden over Eric Swanson, I think, is the only decision.
Why do you think they put Vladdy in the three hole, and do you like it?
Well, I like it just because, I mean, some people think that Vlad should be in the two hole. I think he should be in the three hole.
Mm-hmm.
You potentially come up with guys on base in the first inning, and I like that idea. I've always thought that you keep your best hitter in the three hole. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., when he's right, he's the best hitter on this team. Is he the best hitter on this team right now? Absolutely not. But when he is going well, when he is right, he is unstoppable. So I think moving him back to the three hole, it's a lot like the Eric Swanson decision. It's the only decision, I think. Mm. I think.
Obviously, no one likes to see anybody get injured, but for Bowden Francis, could this time off serve as a bit of a reset, Chris? I mean, you've pitched. Does that work? Can guys use an injury as a reset?
Well, I guess it depends on how serious the injury is. John Schneider said today that there wasn't anything in the MRI that was serious. It's, again, a lot like Eric Swanson. I feel for the guy. It's a mm-hmm. tough decision, especially when he was as good as he was last year. I mean, he was unstoppable last year. It was so fun to watch. Every time I'd come to the ballpark when Bowden was pitching, I'd look over at Ben or look over at Eric, and I'd say, happy Bowden Francis Day. Mm. And to see him struggle the way he struggled this year, you feel for the guy. You feel for the fact that he's just lost out there. And in answer to your question, can he find himself on the IL or in his rehab outings or in Dunedin or wherever he's going to be, the question is, or the answer is, I have no idea. I think it's up to him. I think he needs to look himself in the mirror, and I think he needs to figure out how he can become a big leaguer again. It's not the stuff. It's whether he feels comfortable out on that mound, whether he feels he can do it out on that mound, whether he has the confidence to get guys out. Hopefully he gets it back. Hopefully he's able to throw that fastball effectively inside. In his last start, you could tell that he was trying to come inside, but it's almost like you could see in his mind was saying, don't miss over the middle of the plate. And as a pitcher, when you say to yourself, don't miss over the middle, you just end up hitting guys. And that's exactly what he did. It was tough. That fourth inning was really hard to watch. I think the first three innings, he looked like vintage Bowden Francis, and I was so excited, so happy for him. I thought that he had found something. The stuff was great. The velocity was there. The split finger was the best I'd seen it this season. And then he goes out there, and all of a sudden it just snowballs on him. He walks one guy, then he walks another, then he hits a guy, then he walks a guy, and then he hits a guy, and you could just see the wheels spinning. So it's a good move. Not that he's injured. The IL stint isn't injured, but or isn't a good move. But I think that him being away from the game for an extended period of time, I think that's a good move for him. I hope he comes back and he's just as dominant as he was last year.
Which pitch for Chris Bassitt tonight needs to be great?
Oh boy, fastball. I think it's always the fastball for him, especially with the six lefties in the lineup. This Arizona Diamondbacks team has a ton of power. I think they have 100 and something home runs. They're third in the major leagues in mm-hmm. team home runs. So if you leave a fastball over the middle, especially with the six lefties, it's going to get hit. And I think Chris knows that. He's probably gone over the scouting port already. But it all comes down to the sinker. When that sinker is on, when he can come into lefties, I think that lefty average this year is 280, a little bit lower than last year. So he's doing a better job this season of pitching to lefties, of coming inside to lefties. But once in a while, you'll see that fastball leak over the middle of the plate and lefties will just hammer it. And he's going to have to do it effectively today. Otherwise, he's going to get hammered.
The time off for Hoffman, do you think it'll help?
Yeah, he's just another guy that needs to trust his stuff. There's a lot of guys right now on this pitching staff that just need to learn to trust their stuff. When you have the stuff that Jeff Hoffman has, and it just seems like you don't trust the fastball, you don't trust coming inside with 98, you don't trust getting on top of that split finger. I think that's. I mean, the only thing that can help you is just going out there and doing it. Time off really doesn't help. I think going out there and just telling yourself, hey, bounce this split finger. Don't leave a floater over the middle. And that's what I used to tell guys when I was catching in college, and guys had good sliders or good changeups, and they were just floating those pitches through the zone. I would go out there and I'd say, hey, dude, I don't care if you bounce this in the grass. Just bounce it. Get it down. And I think that Alejandro Kirk or whoever is catching – eventually they need to go out there and they need to tell Jeff Hoffman, hey, just bounce this pitch. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's 0-0. I don't care if it's 2-0. Just bounce this pitch. Get on top of it and get that good downward movement. Mm.
Chris, really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Way
we'll
to go,
see
buddy.
You at the park in a few minutes.
Yep. I'll see you guys later.
See you, man.
Be well. Chris LaRue, our Blue Jays radio analyst on Sportsnet here, and he and Eric will have the call of the game tonight. As the Jays take on the Diamondbacks, 7:05 is the first pitch. Lots of news today. A lot of it surrounding Max Scherzer. This was what the skipper, John Schneider, had to say pregame.
Yes, off the top. All right, a couple things. So start with Max. He's going to pitch in Buffalo tomorrow, roughly 70, hopefully 70, 75 pitches. Responded well from his bullpen. So he's going to do that. Nate Lucas is going to head down there playing a couple games as well, coming after the concussion. He's doing everything here today. He's feeling better. Yimi Garcia, bullpen yesterday. He will throw a live BP in Florida on Thursday. Sandlin is pitching in Buffalo tonight. Manoah did his second live BP in Florida today. 21 pitches, velo up to 94. He's feeling good. Barsh, all baseball activity in Florida, increases running, hopefully run the bases by Thursday or Friday and get him closer to game action. And who am I missing? Tony, still in Florida, has begun throwing, has not begun hitting, and Burr's pitching in Dunedin tonight. Bowden, right shoulder impingement, obviously on the IL. Been dealing with it for probably the last, you know, 2-3 starts, but not enough to hold him out. And I think just after Sunday, wanted to kind of, you know, get some imaging done. There's nothing structural wrong, just some inflammation in his shoulder. So hopefully get that calmed down and, you know, get him kind of back on track.
Is there anything that was impacting performance-wise?
I don't want to say yeah, because he was out there pitching, you know. So like a lot of pitchers, they're dealing and grinding through things. It wasn't enough to hold him out. So hopefully this just kind of gets him back to feeling 100%. And if that, you know, has a direct reflection or impact on his stuff or his location, we'll kind of see. But yeah, it just kind of got to the point to where it was bugging him a little bit and wanted to see what was going on. So Lauer will start tomorrow, and then I think looking to Friday, you can kind of, you know, pencil in kind of like a TBD with Turnbull being an option, and go from there.
What's the rule?
Hopefully get out some lefties. You know, he's been throwing well. It's, you know, another kind of fresh arm and, you know, luxury to have three lefties. So he's a good breaking ball. He can kind of get both sides out. And I think it was kind of a matter of circumstance with Swanee being designated to. Yeah. Yep.
If things go well for Scherzer in his upcoming start, could a return to the majors be next for him?
Yeah, I think if he gets up to the right pitch count and if he's feeling well kind of after that, you know, start tomorrow and after his, you know, next side in between, then I think so. If not, then maybe one more in the minors and be back. Yeah, you know, I mean, performance, obviously, you know, tough conversation with him yesterday and today, you know, saw him today before he left. It's a guy that's been through a lot, obviously, the last couple of years, both on and off the field, and a guy that we all, you know, myself especially, we hold in a very high regard, you know, as a person. So kind of happens in the game when things aren't going your way, and, you know, he understands that part of it, and still, it's still hard to move on from a guy like that that's, you know, meant a lot for you the last couple of years.
Difference between like letting him work out of it last year and having that good second half and now?
I mean, I think just kind of you look at, you know, kind of where we are as, you know, as a team, as an organization, and kind of some other options that we do have now that we may have not had last year. And, you know, kind of it, you know, it's been kind of a long road for him this year in terms of health, in terms of stuff, in terms of performance. So I think we're just kind of at a different, you know, time. We're at a different, you know, part of our season. We're kind of in a different spot than we were last year.
Is Fisher a guy whose emergence sort of changes the equation? Is he someone you count on? Are you starting to be able to count on?
Yeah, definitely starting to be able to count on him for sure. And, you know, I think when you're looking at, you know, any decision that you make, you know, it's mainly to do with the person you're talking about as opposed to what other guys are doing. You know, I think the fact that other guys are performing well, coupled with kind of how Swanee was going, I think that's kind of where we landed with him. But, you know, definitely we're hoping that Swanee could turn it around, and just didn't work out.
For Manoah, if he's up to 21 pitches in his lives, like, does he extend that in lives now, or does he get into games at some point?
Yeah, I think he'll extend it to probably a couple ups in live BP settings, but whether it's, you know, two or three, kind of similar to what Max was doing, where you're getting like three ups and 50 and then probably get into games after that.
Trade on Sunday?
I think we're all kind of surprised sitting on the plane a little bit. You know, it's kind of that time of year, you know, and everyone's trying to do what's best for their team. I know for us, it's, you know, Raffy's done well against us, as he has a lot of teams in this division and around the league. So, you know, everyone's trying to do what they think is right, and happy that we don't have to see him as much as we have in the past.
Normally, trades like that are bringing in a guy like Raffy Hale. What's it like when a guy's leaving your division?
I mean, again, you know, you don't, it's nice when, you know, star players aren't on your schedule regularly, I guess is the best way to put it, you know? So, I think they're trying to, they're still a really good team, you know, Boston, they got a lot of exciting young players and really established good major league players too. So I think they're just trying to do what's best for them. And, You know, you never know what people's plans are going forward after one trade. So we'll see. But again, in the short term, glad we don't have to game plan for him.
That was John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays, in his pregame availability. So Alek Manoah up to 94. Max Scherzer making another start at AAA. Looks very much as if, knock on wood, the thumb isn't an issue. He'll make his next start in the majors. We talked about Eric Swanson being DFA'd. Bowden Francis on the IL. And Justin Brewer called up then because there's the Arizona's got the six lefties. So and I was going to say, given the way the Jays have been able to find gold and Braden Fisher and Eric Lauer, I mean, maybe, and who knows, maybe Justin Brewer ends up contributing tonight in this series. But what else? We had Anthony Santander. It sounds to me like he's a ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton Varsho starting to run.
Mm-hmm.
But Alek Manoah, that's I can't say you've kind of got the impression from people, Kevin, that they think Alek Manoah might be able to help in the fall sometime. But if he's, you don't want to read too much into it. If he's up at 94 already.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into it. I mean, I'd heard end of August, first of September, somewhere in that range, maybe they'd be shooting for. I think it's more about, it seems like he's feeling confident enough that, you know, he can let it eat and sort of it'll be where he wants it to be and that kind of thing. I mean, we'd seen, you know, in the past more 90s than when we'd seen 94, 95. So,
yes.
You know, I don't want to get too overly excited about him saying or they're hearing it up to 94. You know, it's more about pitching at 94. So don't, you know, get crazy. But that will add more depth. You know, that'll give them more options, which is what they don't have, right? I mean, the lineup is a big deal, them scoring runs, that kind of thing, right? This is going to be a good test for them when it just comes to, you know, when the Diamondbacks score, because they're going to, you know, can the lineup score again, like in and again, and sort of do it that way and match up. And, you know, we didn't get to the lineup change, which is – sort of, you know, that's kind of an important part. That'll be intriguing tonight, see how that plays out. But it's about Chris, you know, throwing the cutter more to lefties. That's a big deal, keeping that in the yard. That has been an issue. You know, he's throwing more breaking balls than he's ever thrown since 2016. That's a big deal. Breaking ball's got to be good. The elevated cutter's got to be good. The elevated two-seamer in to righty's got to be good. I mean, you got to do a lot of tricking. I mean, boy, I mean, if he can get all that on the same page and have all that lined up and in the right tunnels – you know, he'll hopefully give him a chance, which is ultimately, I think, all you can ask for. And, yeah, turn it over to hopefully a Jeff Hoffman who hadn't pitched in a while, which maybe, you know, that little mental break of just sitting down there watching everybody else do some things, and which will be kind of nice, I think. Hopefully he'll see maximum velocity and break on all the stuff, and it ends up going where he wants to go. You know, I'll flip it from Vladdy to Hoffman. There need to be some more assurance coming from him, like some more – I got this. Get that thing to the ninth inning. That thing is over. We got to start feeling that way. We don't. Do you? I don't. And I don't think they do either. And, you know, it's when we're asking the question. When we're asking the question, they ain't real. You know, there's not like, heck yeah, he's the ninth inning guy. No, it's a little like, you know, we've heard Petey on our show say, you know, yeah, you could see more Rodriguez and Little and whoever, you know, Jimmy when he gets back flipping that. Yeah, like.
I guess I'm not.
I think the Hoffman thing, he needs to turn the corner and start dominating people.
I guess
that's
I'm not.
I think.
I'm not completely. I'm not completely surprised by it. I kind of thought there'd be some bumps in the road with Hoffman. Do you think he's going to come over in a 40 saves this year?
Yeah.
Out the gate?
I did. Yeah, wow. Absolutely.
I sure
Why
didn't.
Not? I mean, that's
never
all
done
I,
before.
That's all. I, who cares?
Well, you're the one that says.
I never said that.
You're the one that said the ninth inning's a different animal. You say that.
He's not Devers. They didn't surprise him with
all
it.
He's
known it since he signed the money to come here and do that.
All the
That's
time.
An excuse.
You say the ninth inning
too,
is a different animal.
He's too deep into it now.
All the time.
You're making excuses for dudes that are making tons of money. Stop making excuses for them.
You put guys you at different so, levels just because they make money.
Absolutely, and that's
you
the way it
try
should
to
be.
Get line. Well,
yeah, come on, man.
There.
You're looking for stuff.
You went straight soft.
You're looking for stuff.
Ever since you started getting that half-off discount, you got soft on me, bud. Okay? Soft, I tell you.
Yeah. All right.
That's it for us. Blue Jays talk following the game with Blair and Barker. We'll be on again tomorrow from, I think they're going to let us on from 4 to 6 Eastern. Have yourself a great day.